this is Jason Nichols, producer Jason, as most of you know. And I just wanted to let you guys know that we did have some camera issues towards the end of this episode. So if you would please just stick with us as I just play some images instead of the video feed, we would greatly appreciate that. Thank you guys for watching As the World Turns or Burns, and we will see you 2 weeks from now.
Hello, this is Pat Lynch, and you are listening and watching As the World Turns or Burns, our podcast where we just talk about the pressing issues of the day. Joining me is
Kieran O'Keefe,
Brendan Connell,
and
producer Jason
behind the board, making the magic happen. Jason's working extra hard because we now have producer Russ, and he's now there might be a little job competition.
I'll be
look
gone.
At him. Look, he gave me the look. Yeah. Whoa!
Don't worry. I'll be gone. I'll be gone by May. You'll never see me again ever. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm sorry. I've been talking to the English department, and we got other plans for you, son.
Yeah,
so
gonna
you're going to be here a while. But topics. You know, we usually get together and kind of think about some things that, you know, are kind of pressing. I'll start with you, Kieran. What kind of thing you want to, what is it you want to talk about or something that's kind of in the moment that's worth discussing?
Well, one thing I'd like to bring up, which has been in the news a little bit recently, more so a couple weeks ago, but we'll hear more about it next year, is the case before the Supreme Court with the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
The Voting Rights Act was partly struck down in, I want to say, like 2013, somewhere
yep.
around there, the preclearance component of it, where if certain states which had a history of voter discrimination wanted to make changes, they had to get preclearance from the federal government. That was struck down 12 years ago. And now another provision, the last major provision of the Voting Rights Act, which effectively prevent states from diluting minority vote power, which has been interpreted as allowing majority minority districts in a lot of southern states. That is looking like it's probably going to be struck down. It's
yep.
not a sure thing. You never know. But based on the oral arguments, at least, and the comments of the justices, it sounds like that will probably be struck down when the ruling comes out, most likely in June. And so that has a lot of political ramifications, thinking about gerrymandering, thinking about the House of Representatives. If that is struck down, a lot of these southern states are going to gerrymander harder and
yeah.
make it so that you can really eliminate these black majority districts in southern states. Somewhere like Louisiana, for example, has two black majority districts, or two Democrats currently in Congress. Mississippi has one. Alabama has two. Georgia has a rural one. South Carolina has a rural one. So, you know, there's all of these areas which, you know, were the heart of Jim Crow, the heart of voter discrimination and policies that prohibited, you know, effectively prohibited black individuals from voting up until the 1960s. You know, part of that's those states had a higher threshold for these sorts of things. And now if it's struck down, they'll certainly gerrymander. Somewhere like Mississippi, they could easily gerrymander that one district away. Same thing in the other states. So
in Georgia, there's a couple that are going to go, just like John Lewis's old
yeah.
district.
Yeah, a lot of them will go.
Yeah.
So Democrats could lose somewhere up to like even like 20 seats potentially from this. That's like a higher end estimate, but probably lose at least 12 from gerrymandering if that provision is struck down.
Yeah. Well, one thing, you know, before we get, Brendan, before we kind of get your take on this, you were in a race this past weekend, kind of to give us the details as far as the race, how you did.
I ran a race, an ultra marathon out in Arizona called the Javelina 100. It was like, I don't know, I have mixed feelings about it. I honestly was hoping to run a little bit better than I did. But I still feel like I did a lot of good things, positive things. I honestly thought I executed a great race. It just wasn't the day I was looking for.
Yeah.
I had some problems with the heat is really the main thing that was happening.
Yeah, what was the temperature? Because, Arizona, you know, is not like, if you're running in the 80s or even above that, that's going to be rough.
Yeah, it was 83, I think, 83, 84 was the ambient temperature. Yeah. And it's dry, so like the temperature alone is fine. Like I'm used to running it a lot hotter, but the direct sun was just kind of brutal. Yeah. There's no shade on the course, so the whole 100 miles are out in the sun, minus when the sun's down, since you start before sunrise. But
did you have any vultures flying over you?
I didn't see any wildlife. I heard coyotes. There were coyotes there.
Yeah,
I'm sure they would hate me.
Yeah,
I'm sure they would hate me if I fell down or something. But yeah, it was just. I don't know, mid part of the day got like pretty tough with the temperatures. And then like once your body overheats, like other things start to go. So the main problem was when I got too hot, my body wasn't taking in any food. Like I just couldn't get food down. So then for pretty much the whole second half of the race, I was running off of just burning fat. And then
were you cramping?
A little bit in the middle part of the day.
Yeah, that's rough.
Nothing like so bad with cramping, but I was pretty dizzy at a point. Like I was a little bit concerned they were going to pull me or something at an aid station because I wasn't really all there. But I was able to get like soda, like a lot of soda down. Like that kept going down actually and staying down, and even a little bit of solid food. But my energy gels were just like not going down at a point. Yeah. So
and we have to remind that when you say that the race was the 100
miles,
it's 100 miles.
What
was the time?
I'm proud to say this, 14 hours and 59 minutes, so I like barely got under 15 hours.
Yeah.
And I do remember the last like 10 miles of the race, you know, my goal was thrown out, like I was hoping to do better, so it would have been very easy just to like kind of just walk, run it in.
Yeah.
And instead I was like, all right, I'm going to make sure to run every step. I skipped the final aid station. I blew right through it. And I needed to do all of that to get under 15 hours. So I was rewarded to some extent for never giving up.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I broke 15 hours.
Wow.
It was a very fast course, but still I'll take it. It's a PR. So
now, Kieran, you were in a bike race a couple weeks ago.
It's more of a ride than a race, but it's 105 miles, which is definitely not as hard as running 100 miles, but 105 miles around Little Rock.
And that was in Little Rock?
It starts and ends actually in North Little Rock, but then it goes out west of Little Rock to all these small towns you'd never go to otherwise, kind of go through them, and you come back. So you go into like the foothills of the Washita's there, and you come back, go over the Big Dam Bridge in Little Rock, and then make your way into North Little Rock to finish up.
You weren't stopping off at all the historical sites, were you?
No, I mean, I've done that in Little Rock on other trips, but not on this one. Not on
all
this
right.
One, so, yeah.
How many dogs chased you?
Like six.
Oh, gosh. So. Well, we have two endurance athletes and then me.
The Podfather.
The Podfather, yes.
Making the magic happen.
Making the magic happen. So, that's very cool. Now let's get back to Brendan. I remember we've talked about this, and you kind of have a pretty straightforward take on the whole Voting Rights Act to begin with.
Yeah, well, I'll say this: like, if they overturn it, or the court rules against this, then the main problem is the partisan bounce. Like as Kieran said, it's going to lead to a bunch more red seats. So, like, yeah, that I see obviously is problematic, but just I'm in principle, I don't really believe in drawing districts along racial lines, even if you are intending to create these majority-minority districts. I guess part of it is I just don't want to see any gerrymandering.
Right.
But the other part of it, too, is I think it's a little bit overstated that this increases the power of black voters.
Right.
Because the way I see it is, you're creating a blue seat, and probably that Democratic politician's going to be more representative of the interests of minority voters than the Republican, but aren't you just creating a safe blue seat? In which case, you're just creating a safe district in the same way that gerrymandering tends to create safe districts. So I don't know. I would I do see it as a problem, right, getting rid of this, but I would just rather, like, okay, if we really care about representation, we just need to get rid of districts which would require changing the electoral rules, or get rid of gerrymandering, keep the districts, but give it to independent commissions.
Yeah.
Or heck, have ChatGPT do it or something. I don't know, but right. but have it so it's not the state governments, which is like, it's kind of just like a legitimized form of corruption, is just having governments write the rules themselves is what's happening.
Through all that, though, is it safe to say Black and Hispanic representation in the House will decline? You know, that you'll have less representatives?
Probably.
Yeah.
At least at first. I mean, the trend over time has been increased minority representation. Yes, and so it'll probably go down and then start to come back up, most likely. I think, the big solution to this whole thing is to get rid of gerrymandering. That's ultimately the solution. So the Supreme Court now is saying you can gerrymander, based on partisan lines, but they're sort of questioning racial gerrymandering. Just you can't do that.
Anything political, they're saying that the court doesn't rule, right? That if it's for political purposes, that's
they step out of it.
That's up to Congress to fix, and we'll talk about Congress in a minute, but that's they don't want any part of it, right?
No, and I wonder too, even if you passed an anti-gerrymandering bill in Congress signed by the president, would the Supreme Court strike it down as unconstitutional? I don't know. Yeah. I wonder a little bit. But that ultimately, way back when we did that wish list in the spring, that was my first thing, to get rid of gerrymandering, because I think it is feasible, and it would really change American politics if you can just get more competitive districts and just make it so that you have representatives or candidates who are running more towards the center and not towards the extreme, create more competitive districts. It would just be better for the democracy as a whole. And it's not a tough question. It's pretty obvious. It would be better in a lot of ways. Look at our district right now in northern and eastern Arkansas. Rick Crawford will never lose this district unless it's in a primary. He will never lose a general election. It is a completely Democrats, I don't think, even nominated somebody last time in the 2024 election for this district. It's completely non-competitive in the general election. And that's not good. You want to have more competitive elections. And I think gerrymandering has gotten worse for a few reasons. One is technology. It's just easier to do now, technology. But also, we're much more geographically polarized than we were in the past. And if we're geographically polarized, it's easier to create districts that are totally one way or the other. It's one of the biggest changes in modern American politics. But if you go back to even to like the 1992 election, Bill Clinton won a lot of rural counties.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans might not win urban areas, but they won a few, and at the very least they weren't getting crushed in urban areas like they do today. But now urban areas are totally blue, rural areas with a few exceptions are totally red, and it's much easier to gerrymander if everybody's living apart from each other politically. So the self-sorting makes gerrymandering a bigger problem.
All right, anything else, Brendan, on gerrymandering from you?
No, I don't like it. Let's get rid of it.
There you go.
It is frustrating that I think if you ask most voters and explain what gerrymandering is, they don't like it. They would get rid of it too.
Right.
So like, to me, this is evidence where we have the solution to this. Voters want to see the solution, but it still doesn't get done. To me, that's evidence that we have a public that is just doesn't care. It's just so tuned out of politics, or at least tuned out to the extent that they're not going to hold their politicians accountable for these things. They vote Republican or Democrat.
Well, and then whatever party is in the majority and in power, they're not going to back it because they just see the downside. And that goes for both sides.
Yeah, I think like if you're talking about changing the electoral rules and going to if you're talking about changing the electoral rules, I think both parties are not going to do this because both parties have the potential to lose. Right. I mean, you're giving up safe seats, right? These are people that want to keep their seats and their jobs in Washington. So, I guess how this could maybe feasibly be done is you create some sort of like board of trustees that you delegate power to and have them recreate electoral rules, and you make sure that board, it consists of like 50-50 Republicans and Democrats.
Right.
I don't even think that's going to happen, though. I mean, there's too much vested interest in this, so.
Do you remember, you said this in your class, like, 2 years ago, mm-hmm. where you said that, like, if they were to draw districts, or maybe you said a podcast, I don't remember, it was a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
Something about, like, using AI. Has your opinion changed as AI has progressed, or do you think that they should still use, like, a system like that to draw districts?
I would prefer that there's just no districts. I think what I meant by saying like getting AI to do it is, okay, first off, if you use AI, you have to like tell the AI what to do.
Yeah.
So like, but theoretically, if we could decide on how districts should be drawn, if not by partisanship or race, right, you can kind of like automate it and have a bunch of computer science nerds put together a model that just does this in a somewhat impartial way. It's a potential solution. Now you're talking to someone who's not a computer science. Like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to use AI. I view AI as a threat to our society. I would say generally, like, that's probably not the best solution here. But yeah, theoretically, it's like you could have, you can kind of take human, like the human element and the political element out of it by maybe creating some sort of model that does this somewhat impartially. Mm-hmm. It's a potential solution. But like I said, I think we should just get rid of districts. So like Arkansas has got 4 seats. Rather than have 4 districts in Arkansas, just have voters vote for a party. That party would have a list of candidates. And then based off of the statewide percentage of the vote, you split up the seats. So let's say Arkansas is about 75-25 Republican-Democrat. If that was the vote share, then 3 seats go to Republicans and Democrats get 1 seat. It's that.
It also there's no districts. Like third parties.
Yes, you would actually, that would be maybe an effect here, is there could be the rise of third parties, which is another reason why we won't get this, because again, both Republicans and Democrats would view this as a threat to their power. So
yeah, I wonder, with going to, you know, no districts and just having a vote for parties, would that require a constitutional amendment maybe though? It might.
I don't think this does. It would for the presidency, because the Electoral College, I know, is in Article 2, right?
But to abolish congressional districts, are districts explicitly mentioned in the Constitution?
I don't think they are, but I have to double check, maybe.
Yeah. If not, that would be easier. Whenever you have an amendment you need to make, it gets a lot harder. But whatever is done has to be done federally, I think. You can't do it state by state, because every state's going to say, well, if I do it, other state won't do it, therefore we're going to lose power. That's sort of what happened, where Democrats began unilaterally disarming a few years ago, like 10, 15 years ago, voting on these independent commissions. And you see they're trying to backtrack now, like in California, basically suspending that for the time being until 2030 or something.
2030.
Yeah, until the next census. So I think it has to be done federally. State by state is not going to work. It has to be national. You have to do it all at the exact same time. And if you just get rid of gerrymandering and, you know, create a more equitable political system, once that's in place, people I think will be happier with it, it'll be more representative, but you have to get there first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm going to take the second topic, and it's it would sure be nice to have 3 branches of government. We don't have a Congress anymore, at least for the Trump administration, as far as what I see. I mean, they've been out of session 30 days, maybe more. And what does it matter? You know, it's Trump has shown that, you know, he is very comfortable taking full command of everything when it comes to the government, and they're like almost like the Russian Duma, that they're going to rubber stamp it. You know, go and enact tariffs, cool with us. Go blow up narco terrorists off in the Caribbean. Hey, we're down with that. You know, I think even him tearing down the East Wing was a show of, you know, just a show of strength on his part. That, you know, basically he's just messaged that I'm very comfortable doing this. You know, none of this mamby pamby. I'll bring in the historical society. I'll gather opinion. No, it's I think the Trump ballroom is the way to go, and so we're gonna, you know, I'm gonna go do it. And there's yet to be a pushback. You know, oh, they feel proud, like all of a sudden now you have Senate approved appointment that they turned down, that this guy, he had all these like crazy Nazi posts and all that. And so then they feel like, oh yeah, we're providing some independence. But it's really, really scary that, are we going off camera?
No, you're still good.
Oh, okay. But yeah, that's, yeah, I just, it's, yeah, you know, I hate, you know, you hate with everything with Trump's all about norm breaking and unprecedented, you know, and it's getting real old, but this is something very, very different. I mean, I could just, the list keeps going on that normally you'd have Congress having a say, even with the, if it's the president's and his, and the president's parties in the majority, they would want to exert some control and have some say, you know, on, you know, all the things that he's doing. I mean, what do you guys think?
I think this administration's clearly unique in their ability to test the limits of the Constitution, yeah, and then some. I will say, though, that this has kind of been the trend, though, since probably at least FDR, is the expansion of the presidency.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that presidents do nowadays that wasn't done by, like, the 19th century presidents, or mm-hmm, that isn't, you know, explicitly in the Constitution. Right. So, like, this is an office that has gradually gotten more powerful over time, which kind of then makes you wonder, like, why is that? Right? It's almost like a bit of a puzzle, is why does the president get more powerful over time and Congress doesn't really do the same, despite the fact that we still have the same Constitution?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer I would give is voters either don't care about an expanding presidency, or they actually want an expanding presidency at time.
Right.
And I think once you give more powers to the presidency, it's hard to take those powers back. Right. And that's why it's kind of just gone in this direction of presidents getting more and more powerful. Right. So, like, FDR, there's a Great Depression. We need a more active federal government. So he starts doing things and executive orders and all this stuff that is maybe arguably outside the limits of the Constitution, but the public accepts it because we want solutions to a depression. Same thing we could say about, like, George W. Bush post 9/11 with the Patriot Act. And it's like,
yeah,
we're going to give more power and we're going to allow, you know, George W. Bush to send troops to Iraq and Afghanistan without a declaration of war, because that's what voters want right now. And we're willing to have a more powerful president, right, if it means more good things for us. And then even Trump now, it's like, I know not everyone's a fan of Trump, but let's say, like, the National Guard stuff, sending the National Guard, yeah, into cities. I mean, I know people that love this because there is, like, a crime problem in these cities. So they're willing to put up with getting rid of checks and balances, sure, so long as it means lower crime. So that's, like, a pattern I noticed throughout history, is usually voters, they actually don't really care about checks and balances more, right, times than not. They care about their wallet, or they care about lowering crime. And when it comes to, like, looking for solutions, it's the president we look to provide, yeah, those solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So we're usually willing to just keep giving powers to the president. Then we can't take them back, though.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Karen?
And part of what makes Trump so able to do what he does is that he has such incredible loyalty among the Republican base. That's, yeah, part of what it is. There have been times in history where presidents have not been as powerful, but it's generally been because they aren't very popular and they, right, lose support within their own party. And that makes it harder for them to do what they want to do. So if you go back to mid-late 19th century, Andrew Johnson, very unpopular president. He really couldn't get anything he wanted done. Something like 2/3 of his vetoes were overridden by Congress, which is by far a record. Nobody's close to that record. That'll probably never be broken. And the presidency got quite a bit weaker after Lincoln because of Johnson and then the presidents who followed him, with just a stronger Congress and a weaker president. But certainly in the 20th century, that's changed. But I think just with party loyalty and Trump having this really powerful tie to the base, he can really do kind of whatever he wants and Republicans will back him. Because ultimately, the Republicans in Congress, for the most part, and this goes back to gerrymandering again to some degree, are more worried about a primary than they are a general election.
Yeah.
And as long as that's the case, they need to keep the base happy, and that means going along with whatever Trump wants. And so Congress certainly has abdicated a lot of its power in the way that I think that the founders wouldn't have envisioned. But they also didn't envision a political party system, and that's, you know, that was a big oversight on their part.
But is it loyalty or fear?
You know, I think both.
Yeah, because, you know, it's that's, you know, that he's, you know, he is perfectly fine with just, you know, with just flat out threats, and you know, and he'll primary, he'll personally go and find primary candidates for anybody that dares to get in his way, and maybe that's always the case, but it's just something unique with him that you know, where they just really do not want to cross or oppose anything that he does. And I mean, the power of the purse, for instance, with Congress, you know, they're, quietly that the White House is just, you know, like refusing to spend money or redirecting money that, you know, that is unheard of, that, you know, that that Congress would be okay with this, but they're basically just opening the door to just allow more and more of that control to go over, and like you guys have said, how do you reverse that?
And it's hard to reverse once precedents are established like that. It's hard to backtrack. So I don't have a great solution to it, but it's just the way the system is set up. It incentivizes this partisanship right now, which is just, I think, bad for the country.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I mean, it would take voters punishing these actions, which I already said I don't think is going to happen.
Yeah.
It might also take reforming Congress in some way, because Congress is at a disadvantage in that it's just more people. It's harder to get stuff done, right. Whereas a president is, it's one person, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, just historically, Congress has been the least trusted branch because, in part, they're so bad at getting stuff done, right? It hasn't just been this administration, but... yeah, Congress has almost always been the least popular branch of government, which is another thing that gives the presidency more power.
Yeah.
So,
is there anything you want to pick up?
Like nominate a topic. I don't really have anything on my mind.
Okay. Well, one more. The shutdown.
Yeah.
Kind of predictions. Now, when we were doing predictions, I predicted that it would happen and that eventually the Democrats would get the blame. They'd mismanage it somehow and get the blame. I don't know where this, SNAP benefits are going to end in Saturday, November 1st. So then all of a sudden now they're out there, you know, taking, you know, they're the cause of all the this hardship with all these people. And then you as it continues on, you know, air traffic control, snag. I mean, there's a lot of, they can hold strong, but it's they're going to be taking some hits. Now, maybe with the Obamacare going up, subsidies going away, and people really start to see the increases that show up, that might change things. But, you know, I think the total number of people impacted by that's like 12, 14 million. It's not like a significant number of people. So kind of a big preamble, but where do you guys see the shutdown, kind of when it's ending, you know, and how it ends?
I have no prediction for when it ends. I have no idea. It could be tomorrow. It could be in 3 weeks. Could be in 6 weeks. I really don't know. With these kinds of things, I think when they end very quickly and sometimes unexpectedly.
Right.
What was your other question, how it ends?
Yeah.
Somebody's going to have to give in. I'm going to guess that eventually, and I could be wrong, but eventually the administration will do something to try to ameliorate the premiums on the Obamacare stuff, but that's just a guess. I don't know.
I would like to see the government shutdown go on for much longer and for it to get painful, unfortunately, because I think that's what we need to happen.
Yeah.
When you talk about the expanding powers of the presidency, that will stop happening when public approval goes down. And that's been kind of the saving grace, is Trump's approval rating has never really been that high, and it's been lower now than it was, you know, 9 months ago when the term started. So I actually kind of think that the reaction so far has been one of ambivalence.
Mm-hmm.
And I admit that I traveled over the weekend and I didn't notice any difference with TSA and getting on the airplane and whatnot. So But you let this go on long enough, it, you know, yeah, it will start to change how society works, and then maybe people will wake up. And I still think they will blame the Republicans over the Democrats. I stand by that prediction. And so my hope is that I kind of want everyone to start hurting so that people feel like they have skin in the game and they become more politically aware or just care more about what's going on. Because that's been another frustrating thing these past 9 months is like most voters just don't care.
Yeah.
You know?
It's amazing how stable Trump's approval rating is, and even in his first term, it just doesn't go anywhere. I mean, it went down a little bit the first few months, but starting in April, it's pretty much just been a flat line, like 42 to 44%, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change. His first term was the same thing. Starts out a little bit higher, goes down. He was like between 39 and 44% his entire presidency, more or less. It just doesn't change at all. He's so, I mean, voters aren't very engaged, and then Trump himself is so divisive and polarizing that people are so entrenched in their views of him, it just doesn't shift anything. And that, I think, is a little bit dangerous because it almost gives Trump the ability to do crazy things and not have to experience political consequences as a result.
Yeah.
Even the insurrection, his approval rating maybe dropped a couple percentage points.
Yeah. You go down like 36 polls or something.
But it wasn't as big as you would hope it would be, you know.
Well, and is some of it just the hatred of the other side? You know, that they, you know, so Trump's like him or don't like him, he's a charismatic politician. You know, he's got, he's kind of got that Hollywood appeal. You know, there's things are always happening. You know, he draws a lot of attention to himself, markets himself very well in a lot of respects. So, there's part of that that they like him, but I still always think there's this flat out just hatred for the other side that, you know, that also kind of locks in his support.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely part of it where people will say, I don't like Trump's personality, but he does some good things. The Democrats are really bad.
Yeah.
Because I think within the Trump supporters, you can really divide them into a few different buckets. I would say they're like the diehard ideologues, people who like are really truly MAGA.
Right.
Then you have the people who are like, they find Trump a little bit unseemly, but they like what he does for the most part, and they're strong Republicans or conservatives, so they vote for him. And then there's people who vote for him even though they don't really like him because the Democrats are just worse. I think these are kind of like the three buckets I would throw a lot of Trump voters into.
Where are the deplorables and all that?
I don't know. It's amazing though how much, like, I'm not saying Hillary Clinton should have said that, but she said that. Not a great comment,
right.
But apparently suffered a lot politically from it. And Trump will come out and say the left are terrorists. They're destroying America. They're burning down the country. And like, there are no consequences.
Cool
for
with
it.
Us. we agree.
No major Democratic politician, not in leadership at least, has come out and said, the right is, they're burning our cities, they're murdering our kids, whatever, the crazy things Trump says.
Yeah, they're eating the cats and dogs.
Eating the cats and dogs. All that.
Oh, yeah. One last thing before we wrap up. Trump, third term. Yay, nay?
I'm going to say no. No, it doesn't happen.
I don't think it will happen, but I do think there'll be some prodding in the next couple of years. It's going to be really awkward because we're probably about 15, 16 months away from when the Republican primary candidates would start declaring.
Yeah.
And so what is J.D. Vance going to do? You know, he wants to be president, but he doesn't want to aggravate Trump either. And so did he announce his campaign in February 2027, or does he sit on it a little bit longer? Yeah. I think what's more likely to happen, there's no way for Trump to get elected again. Just, the Constitution is very clear. I mean, Amy Coney Barrett, in her interviews when she was doing her book tour, was very clear that there's no room for, interpreting the 22nd Amendment another way. You cannot be elected for a third term. What I think is more likely is you get to the election, a Democrat wins, and then Trump says, well, actually, it was rigged. It's unfair. I need to stay in power longer until we fix things. And then he just doesn't leave.
Yeah.
I think that's much more likely. Not elected to a third term, but he just refuses to leave. And I don't know what happens in that situation.
Yeah, biology is going to have to kick in sometime, where he's got the cankles and the hand bruises. And, pretty soon he's going to need it. He's just going to start wearing down. He's a pretty robust guy. I mean, he's doing a tour of Asia, but you know, it's
when he turns in the big brother, you know, it's just pictures of him everywhere, and he's like, oh, Trump said this, but
there's a like a Weekend at Bernie's, you know, that could happen, it's just, you look at everybody who enters the presidency, how much it ages them, you know. Now got turned his hair a different color of blonde or whatever, but he does
look and seem older than he did his first term, but he's also, he is older.
Oh, he is older. Term. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
That's how time works.
I just, you know, I think that, you know, will it be a Biden thing where, you know, all of a sudden he starts to slow down. That would be my guess, is that there's going to be something that's general aging that, despite his great, what he takes his IQ test or whatever it is, and all the other stuff he brags about. But, I think age is going to catch up to him.
Maybe. I just, based on everything he's done, I think you'd have to be a little bit crazy to think that it's very likely he's going to hand over power to a Democrat.
Yeah.
I could see a scenario where J.D. Vance wins in 2028 and he hands over to his protege, you know, whatever. That could happen. But I have a very hard time seeing him peacefully say, oh, here, you know, President Josh Shapiro, here you go. I'm going to attend your inauguration.
Yeah.
It'd be so out of character for him. I just can't see it.
Oh, yeah. Well, because, you know, the problem is that if a Democrat administration rolls in, watch all the investigations. Oh, my goodness. You know, just unraveling the whole crypto, you know, scheme that they have going on. How is it that they've accumulated reportedly $800 million in profits from crypto? You got, you know, the one I read lately, Don Jr. is in some, he's involved with a company that makes drones that, lo and behold, now, you know, the drones are being bought by the military and all these things just keep rolling on. You got every time that he does like a real major economic announcement, there's somebody that shorted or, you know, like stock that ends up making just a huge windfall. Just just one of those miraculously lucky trades that happens, you know, 30 minutes before the announcement. And it's at such a different level of corruption that when the other party comes in, you have to expect that they're going to go in just, unless he just finds a way creatively to blanket pardon everybody.
Every politician do the latter? Doesn't every politician just do that, the insider trading thing? They just trade and make moves right before it happens because they know.
Yeah, but that's amateur stuff compared to what we're seeing now. This is like, hold my beer. I will show you. You know, Hunter Biden, yeah, you made a couple hundred thousand sitting on the board of a Ukrainian company. You know, let me show you how to, you know, make $800 million, you know, with World Liberty Finance, their crypto company, and, you know, and all the list just goes. I mean, it's at a whole new level. And then, goodness, you know, just investigating Pam Bondi and Cash Patel. I mean, you know, just the things that they've done to just, you know, go and, you know, really go and whatever they're going to be doing between the start of the administration to the end, you know, they're all the retribution that with a different administration, it'll all catch up to them.
Maybe. I don't know what you do in that situation, because at some point the cycle has to end. It can't be investigations of the previous administration every next administration. It seems like a lot of bad stuff's going on in this administration, so maybe you have to do it. But at some point, the cycle just needs to be broken. It's not good. It's not like sustainable in a democracy to have every subsequent administration go after the previous administration.
Sure.
It just doesn't work. So Maybe you have to do it one more time with the Trump administration, but we've got to break that cycle at some point. It's just very bad for the country because it feels like it feels vindictive. The other side feels like they want to retaliate. They need to retaliate. And I mean, that's part of what, you know, the Trump administration is why they're doing what they're doing is they feel like they need to retaliate from what, you know, they feel like they got
what happened to them,
steamrolled by Biden. And, you know, I think unfortunately for the prosecutions of Trump, the only one that went to trial was the least persuasive one. Was the one, the hush money case, which just to the average person who has no clue about electoral finance law, it just seemed like, well, he paid money to a porn star, you know, whatever. That's not a good thing, but it's not. Why is he being prosecuted?
Right.
For it?
Right.
I don't know.
Well, you know, I've heard that, you know, like if it does change parties and administration, that almost like, you know, like that Truth Commission in South Africa.
Truth and Reconciliation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And just do something where you kind of have a hearing and it's just that, okay, you were part and parcel of these corrupt schemes, but we're just going to end, you know, we'll end it there and maybe that'll break the cycle.
Maybe. I'll say you mentioned stocks. I'll say I saw this earlier with the Trump's popularity. I think one reason Trump has maintained some popularity is the stock market has done very well the last few months. And as long as that's doing well and helping prop up the economy, I think he will probably be okay. If Trump's popularity goes down, it's because the economy will suffer. And eventually he'll get blamed for it by enough people.
Yeah. And people's 401ks are real noticeable. The inflation is ticking up, but it's hard to really notice. You know, if gas prices, for instance, really spike, that's something people can see right away because they tend to move pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, your Cheerios are now 20 cents more a box than they were 3 months ago. It's hard to notice that kind of thing.
There's a lot of motivated reasoning, too. I would not be surprised if people still blame Biden for inflation.
Oh, yeah.
And I think people don't know what inflation is. I think they almost expect prices to go down, which would be deflation.
Right.
That's not going to happen. I hope that doesn't happen. That means you're in a recession, usually.
Also forget that, like, just because, like, gas prices go down, which the president doesn't really control that anyway.
Sure.
Just because gas prices don't go down, don't mean, like, other things are going up. Right, like you said, like 20 cents for Cheerios, but gas is now $2.50. So like, cool.
Yeah, but you read enough of the things on social media. People were extremely critical of Biden for high gas prices. Yeah.
I had a bunch of friends who are always like, shows like a $90 gas pump, and it's like, thanks Biden.
Thanks
it's
Biden.
Like, okay.
There's no issue that I found more frustrating or almost infuriating is the gas price thing. Like the end of the Biden presidency, gas prices had started to go down. And I remember so much on social media seeing, it's very convenient it's going down right before an election. So for that to be the case, you'd have to think that Biden intentionally raised gas prices when he had the power not to do it. And then, for whatever reason, left them there his entire presidency. And then was at the end of his presidency, he was actually, I need to drop them now so I wouldn't. It doesn't make any sense. It's just a really
– right.
It just doesn't connect in any shape or form.
Are the people who are like, well, gas prices were going down because they knew Trump was coming. And it's like, oh, really? No. That is – I saw a couple of those by my grandparents on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, anything else?
I was going to say, with regard to third term, so there's like a very common playbook that's done by initially democratically elected leaders that then kind of rein back checks and balances. And one of the common things is they will extend term limits in some fashion. They'll give themselves a third term, a fourth term. Happened with Evo Morales, Bolivia, Maduro in Venezuela, Putin in Russia, Erdogan in Turkey. Like, there's like so many examples of this. But when that happens, they can only do that if they're popular. And what I mean is like at least 50% of the vote. Like we forget, like even Morales, even Maduro, even Erdogan and even Putin have like popularity at the time that they kind of extend their term limits. So I still think that for the US, the saving grace is public opinion. Like Trump doesn't have that.
Right.
So Trump can't get away with giving himself a third term because you need more than your base. You need to get independent voters and maybe even some Democrats on your side. You need like 60, 70% of the vote share. He's never going to have that. So That's why I don't think he's going to have a third term. I could see him throwing a fit. Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably going to happen if, you know, whoever runs in 2028, right. Republicans lose. But I'm actually still optimistic that we'll get a power transition one way or the other. If we don't, if Trump has a third term, I'll probably just resign from my job, because then I can't do this anymore.
Jason, please edit that. We want to keep Brendan around for a while. So
yeah, my prediction would be wrong, and I just
don't want you to go anywhere.
I just give up trying to study public opinion because I just don't understand it. It's like, how could you ignore what's very clearly written in the Constitution? Right. It's just
the only thing I question about that is, like, okay, let's say Trump knows that he's probably going to lose, like, because people are going to be like, oh, that's really sus that he's trying to go for a third term, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that just when you just try to go full blown? Like, you know, like, you want power so bad. Isn't that when you just play all the voting rigging stuff at that point? Like, you just go full blown on trying to win the election by any means necessary?
Yeah, National Guard at all the...
Well, not even National Guard, but just like...
Well, Trump would have to be in the ballot, right, in 2028?
Well, either that, but just like, are you just like fudge numbers or try to just do whatever means possible to win, you know?
Maybe. I don't know. Rigging elections is like a very 20th century thing.
Yeah.
Like, even dictators don't do that anymore. Like... What you do is you try to actually kind of co-opt the public and civil society and get them on your side. You promise them certain things. You get key, you know, interest groups to support you. And yeah, like, you can manipulate elections around the edges. But again, it's like how Evo Morales got rid of term limits in Bolivia is he put it up to referendum and had people vote. And they voted for it because Evo Morales was popular during the time and he spoke for the indigenous Bolivians, who were a majority of the population. So again, Trump doesn't have that. And if Trump wanted to go like Rambo, so to speak, and start just ripping up the Constitution, he could try.
Yeah.
But I still think that there'd be enough voters to say, we're not going to put up with this. And then they would start yelling at people in Congress. They would yell at Republican senators as well. And then everyone would come to the defense. Like, Trump cannot do this on his own. He's going to need support from other people, including voters. I don't think he has it.
No.
So.
Well, we'll end on an optimist, semi-optimistic. Thank you. Well, gosh, I'm kind of at a loss for words, but thank you for listening and watching As the World Turns or Burns. We had an episode last week, and then we had one this week, so we're starting to get into a rotation. We're going to keep coming at you, and you'll see us probably in another 2 weeks, would be my guess. But if there's something that pops up, we're always here ready to go. So I'll say goodbye, Kieran.
See you next time.
Adios.
We got catchphrases now too. And anything from you, producer Jason?
No.
That's his new catchphrase. No.
I mean you can find the show on every platform conceivably known to man for foreseeable future, but Trump gets elected to a third term, that could maybe change depending on the situation.
Maybe we'll start broadcasting from the White House.
The new whatever they're building when they tore down
the new Trump wing. Yeah. So, but real good. Well, thank you.
Studio wing.
Yeah. you can only dream. All right. So, take care and thank you for watching. Take care.
This podcast is sponsored in part by Lyon College and Kilt Studios. Thank you to Jonah Winter for the intro and outro music.